Welcome. I am Kendra, the education director here at GREAT, and we'd like to welcome you to the Helgeson Learning Lab Theater, which was built in 2017 with the support from over 400 donors in our community. The lab exists to bring unique stories of our community to the stage, and tonight's production is such a story. A few housekeeping details. Restrooms and drinking fountains are located through this door. But as you know, tonight's production is a live radio broadcast, meaning we will be going live on air shortly, and meaning we are bound by time a little differently. Our intermission is a true 9 minutes, and then we're back on the air. So please be in your seat. Run safely if you have to. As the studio audience, your reactions are part of our story tonight, and we hope that you enjoy this backstage look at a radio broadcast. We'd also like to remind you that actors will be using these aisles, so please stay clear of them.
And hello, I'm Joe with KVSC Radio. Tonight's production of Sherlock Holmes is brought to you by GREAT Theater, KVSC 88.1 FM, and is supported in part by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Legacy Grant, as voted by Minnesotans in November of 2008. Thank you. It is partnerships such as this that bring creative energy and experiences to Central Minnesota and to you, our live in-studio audience. Thank you for joining us for this radio theater adventure this evening. By the way, tonight's show will be posted as a podcast feature by mid-next week, right, Jeff? Yes. You'll find it under the Features Podcast link at kvsc.org. And if you enjoy this show, you are invited to check out KVSC's Granite City Radio Theater, now in its eighth season. Our next show is Wednesday, December 11th. We're welcoming Prudence Johnson, and we have two shows in the spring.
Again, we welcome you to GREAT in the lab and hope to see you at a future GREAT production, either in this space or at the Paramount. 2 weeks from today, in this very room, we will open Rainbow Fish, which is designed and directed by a team of high school students. And then it's time for Elf, a holiday classic, which opens at the Paramount on November 29th. So if you're up for some sparkle, jolly, twinkly, jingly, get your tickets at greattheater.org. And now we turn our attention to our studio. As we're about to begin our broadcast, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome, everyone. I'm director John Legg, and tonight, KVSC Radio, in partnership with GREAT Theater, takes pleasure in bringing you the third in its series of yearly radio drama broadcasts. This time, Central Minnesota's most celebrated theatrical producing company brings to life the best-loved character in detective fiction, the immortal Sherlock Holmes. The play is Jeff Carmack's reinvigoration of Orson Welles' own adaptation for radio of William Gillette's endearing melodrama based on the famous stories by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Specifically, we visit Baker Street in a London of the late 19th century, just before the world changes dramatically, where high adventure awaits under a gas lamp with an Inverness cape. For tonight, we pay tribute to the most wonderful member of that most wonderful world, a gentleman who never lived and who will never die. He's one of our permanent iconic cultural profiles, the tall gentleman with the hawk's face and the underslung pipe and the fore and aft cap. We'd know him anywhere by sight as well as by voice, any voice of the myriad of actors who have delivered the dry, final, famous lines. Elementary, my dear Watson. Elementary, the mere child's play of deduction. So, without further ado, the story of Sherlock Holmes and his most challenging adversary, Professor Moriarty.
My name is Watson. I am a doctor. It is the year 1893, 13 years since Holmes and I were introduced by a mutual acquaintance. It is the age of gaslights, horse-drawn carriages, and a brand new clothing technology called the Zip Air. At the time, we were both looking for lodging that would suit our moderate means. This we found on the second floor of a house at 221B Baker Street, above the lovely yet stern Miss Hudson.
Is that you talking to yourself on the stoop again, Dr. Watson? I wouldn't believe a doctor like yourself would consider that to be very healthy.
Just collecting my thoughts, Mrs. Hudson. Thank you very much. It was during the ensuing decade or so when we occupied these chambers together that Holmes established his unique international reputation as a consulting detective. During that time, I was privileged to be his daily companion and have done my modest share in giving to the world an account of some of his most famous cases. Most spectacular of these are the ones which I have written under the names of The Speckled Band, Sign of Four, Hound of the Baskervilles, and A Study in Scarlet. They represent, however, only a minute fraction of the 643 cases that Holmes successfully solved during the years that we shared in the lodgings on Baker Street. Other cases I hope one day to give to the world include the Tarkington murders, the adventure of Rick Rolletti and the Spicy Salver, and the case of the royal family of Scandinavia. Each illustrate in their own way the remarkable genius of my friend Sherlock Holmes. Since my marriage 3 years ago to my wonderful Mary, Holmes has continued to occupy the lodgings on Baker Street by himself. And here, almost every day when my work in the office is finished around 6 p.m., I'm in the habit of calling on him. The sitting room, as you go in, is exactly as it has been for the past 13 years. The worn bearskin rug, the huge sofa covered with faded chintz, the mantelpiece cluttered with miscellaneous objects, unanswered letters, and piles of loose tobacco. On one side of the fireplace, in a deep armchair, his pipe curling forth slow wreaths of acrid smoke, draped in his hideous purple dressing gown, sits Sherlock Holmes with his violin under his chin.
Come in. Watson, my dear fellow.
How are you, Holmes?
I'm delighted to see you. Perfectly delighted, I am, upon my word, but I'm sorry to see that your wife has left you.
She has gone on a little visit, but how did you know?
How did I... Well, I like that. How do I know anything? How do I know that you've an absent servant girl and that you've moved your dressing table to the other side of the room?
Holmes, if you'd lived a few centuries ago, they'd have burned you at the stake.
Such a spectacular conflagration unfolding from the misgivings of an uneducated populace would have saved me a great deal of trouble and expense.
Tell me now, how did you know all that?
It's too simple to talk about. Scratches and clumsy cuts, my dear fellow. On the inner side of your shoe there, just where the firelight strikes it. Scratches, cuts, somebody scraped away crust and mud and did it badly, very badly. Scraped the shoe along with it. You might be a skilled doctor, but you make for a lousy bootblack. Shoe shining and surgery are very different beasts, I see, for that is normally the job of Sally, your household servant girl. Your face badly shaved on the right side, always used to be on the left. Light must have come from the other side. Couldn't very well move your window, must have moved your dressing table. An absent servant girl and the chance for you to finally move your dressing table against your wife's better judgment point to her absence. Plus, just 2 weeks passed, Mary asked if I'd like some marmalade from up the Berwick-upon-Tweed way when she next made a visit to her mother. I said yes, of course, and thank you. Your stubble growth suggests she left 2 days ago.
Marvelous.
Elementary, my dear fellow, elementary. The child's play of deduction. Yet I'm only doing it for your amusement before we pass on to more serious matters.
Oh? What is it now, Holmes?
My dear fellow, it's perfectly delightful. My whole life is spent in a series of frantic endeavors to escape from the dreary commonplaces of existence. For a brief period, I escape. You should congratulate me. Allow me to explain, for we are already in the midst of a case. The day before yesterday, I received in this room a visit from a certain nobleman by the name of Lord Hugo Heterodyne, who has recently inherited a very considerable title, as his family is on the cusp of unleashing a revolutionary new technology upon the world. It seems that this titled gentleman was so indiscreet as to fall in love with a young English lady by the name of Eunice Faulkner, socially his inferior, and to make her a promise of marriage. At his family's insistence, after discovering the relationship, the affair was broken off, and the young lady died shortly after of a broken heart, leaving behind a bereaved sister, Alice Faulkner, and also a considerable amount of evidence in the form of letters, photographs, and jewelry with inscriptions. These the sister kept, and these are now being used to blackmail our nobleman by a pair of ne'er-do-wells using the name of Chetwood, presumably with the help of Ms. Faulkner. This whole gaggle has taken up at a public guest house owned by the Heterodyne family. So far, as you see, my dear Watson, a fairly ordinary case of blackmail, hardly worth my attention. Last night, however, on my inspection, a certain element revealed itself which renders the case far more important than I had expected.
This revolutionary new technology, it's the price the blackmailers are asking for.
Apparently, yes, but no. Our noble gentleman believes that these three are in league to profit as much as possible from the new technology, or do as much harm as possible to the Heterodyne name if they don't get what they want. I need not remind you of the cost of embarrassment to these families. The technology they are after is called pneumatic undercurrent nucleoaquatic kinetics. Lord Heterodyne gave me a brief tutorial.
I know what three of those words mean, but nucleoaquatic?
Yes, nucleoaquatic. One word. Apparently, it's a form of steam.
Makes for an interesting acronym, too. Pneumatic undercurrent nucleoaquatic kinetics.
Indeed it does.
Still, it sounds like fiction.
And yet it is science, Watson. We should try not to be blinded by it.
Holmes, seriously, steampunk. It sounds like something that you do to tea.
Yes, and as you dismiss the future, please be sure to restock your supply of leeches before our next outing. The 20th century is just around the corner, my dear Watson. What we don't understand might very well bring our demise.
Point taken, Holmes. Now, this certain element you discovered, it was not the technology.
Correct. It was Professor James Moriarty.
Moriarty? I don't ever remember having heard of the fellow.
No, Watson, you haven't. It's precisely this quality of invisibility that makes Professor Moriarty the Napoleon of crime, sitting motionless like an ugly venomous spider in the center of his web, but that web having a thousand radiations and the spider knowing every quiver of every one of them. However, by midnight tonight, I'll have the lines drawn so tightly around him that he can't move. I'll either arrest him and his entire gang, or he shall be my most permanent downfall.
Why, Holmes, this does sound to be a very dangerous thing.
Come in.
Beg pardon, Mr. Holmes. I've got your tea and biscuits with some of the new marmalade from the Heterodyne estate. The Lord and his servant were so kind the other day. I've been snacking on it ever since, and it is as good as any I've had. Oh, and a visitor downstairs, if it pleases you.
Your tea is always pleasing, Mrs. Hudson, yet visitors are only pleasing for usually the first 15 seconds or so.
What would be pleasing to me, Mr. Holmes, is seeing you clean up a bit. This clutter will be your undoing. I say it every day, and I will continue to say it every day until you bring things to order. That exact thing every day. And by the Queen's corgis, it will come true. Anyway, gentleman to see you by the name of Foreman. Looks to be a footman of sorts.
Ah, yes, Inspector Foreman. I would thank you to show him up. And, Mrs. Hudson, would you mind handing me the letter that has come from Oxford before you head down?
No. How did you know that the letter arrived this evening?
Mrs. Hudson, I could pontificate upon the numerous details suggesting so, or just point out the one obvious clue. The letter is sticking out of your apron pocket.
Mr. Foreman on his way up.
Oxford, thinking of spending some of your time lecturing?
Don't be daft, Watson. I'd rather play chess with a pigeon than spend 5 seconds trying to convince today's youth how they don't even know what they don't even know. Excellent. Oxford's reply is very revealing.
Come in, Mr. Foreman.
Good evening, Inspector Foreman.
Good evening, Mr. Holmes.
Watson, this is Inspector Foreman. Since yesterday, he occupies the position of footman under the name of Judson in a quaint public house owned by the Heterodyne family near St. John's Woods. He was hired on in confidence by their butler, Mr. Bates, as repayment for my help with an issue concerning a scam perpetrated by his former wife. Well, Foreman, any news?
Yes, sir. According to the other servants, Miss Faulkner has been spending all of her time in either her room or the drawing room since arriving, even for meals. This morning, a little after 9, Mr. Chetwood drove away in the coach with the Heterodyne crest upon it without his wife or the Faulkner girl. He returned about 11. Madam Bassick was with him. You know her, sir?
Yes. When last I had the occasion to meet Madam Bassick, she got 2 years for safe-cracking. No one expected a woman to be so skillful, so she was never expected at first. Go on, Foreman.
Well, they took this woman Bassick into the library. I got a look at her from the outside, and there she was, applying her old trade by opening the safe.
Go on.
In the end, when they got the safe open, it was empty.
Excellent.
The letters were gone. That got them pretty excited. Bassick then went out, presumably to send a telegram. I saw Mrs. Chetwood write it, and Bassick took it.
Ms. Faulkner never gave the letters up in the first place, so it appears that she is not in league with the blackmailers, nor are they all too intelligent to believe she would bring them with her. The telegram, have you got a copy of it?
No, sir. After Bassick left, Mrs. Chetwood occupied me with a number of meaningless chores. In order to not break my cover, I had to do the work. I was only just recently able to get away, but I was able to confirm with Mr. Bates about the package. He said he followed your instructions to the letter.
Excellent. This case is taking a most promising turn. Foreman, you'll return at once to the house as footman. Within minutes of your arrival, I shall be there myself. If I remember correctly, the kitchen is immediately below the drawing room where we will meet with Ms. Faulkner. When I knock over a chair in that drawing room, you'll overturn a lamp in the kitchen. Scatter these smoke balls and give an alarm of fire.
Very good, sir.
You've done well, but hurry, Foreman.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Well, my dear Watson, it begins to look like a most interesting evening. The game is afoot.
It's 7 already. Nighttime. I say I go up there and work on her a bit. She'll tell me right quick where the letters are.
No, Larrabee, you won't. Right now, Alice Faulkner believes that we are Mr. and Mrs. Chetwood, proprietors of this establishment. If we harm her, she will flee and be lost, at which point the professor will be personally insulted. You don't want that, now do you?
No, of course not. But sitting around with not to do is driving me mad, and I'd like to take that madness out on someone.
Oh, poor Larrabee. I shall sing you to sleep with a sweet dream that may someday soon come true. Amazing how such a simple phrase can hypnotize even the strongest willed and make them mind to control. Calm now. Help me get with my disguise, for I expect we'll have a rather impressive visitor any minute now, and you'll need to follow my lead. We can't let him get to her too easily. I am your wife of a few years now, and you are, for certain, a happy man. Now, to complete my disguise... How does my accent sound?
Oh, yes, Mum, they'll never recognize you now.
I think we're ready.
And Dr. Watson to see you, Mr. Chetwood, sir.
Please show them in, Judson.
Good evening. My name is Sherlock Holmes, and this is Dr. Watson.
Yes. Thank you, Judson. That will be all. What brings the famous detective to our door tonight?
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Chetwood and Mrs. Chetwood. I'm here at the behest of one of your guests, a Ms. Alice Faulkner.
You mean the woman from Dorchester who's been holed up in the drawing room the last few days?
One and the same, I imagine.
I'm sorry to speak out of turn, Mr. Chetwood, but Alice is a bit under the weather tonight. She spoke to me woman to woman about such things.
Well, that's just too bad. Maybe try back in a couple days when she feels better.
I fear Ms. Faulkner might be caught up in a matter beyond her reckoning, and I feel it would be best if we visited.
Don't worry, I'm a medical doctor and may be of help if she needs it.
I'm sure she'll be fine. We normally don't have guests visiting this late, Mr. Holmes.
And yet, I am not a normal guest, am I? Mr. Chetwood, why do you look to your wife for support? Will her needlepoint provide you with the courage and creativity to produce an answer deflective enough to cause me to go away?
Forgive my husband, please, Mr. Holmes. His father was a veteran of the Crimean War and raised him in a way so he would never break any rule, no matter how small. Being harsh with him will not move this conversation forward. I will call Judson to fetch her. Judson, I haven't even rang for you.
No, ma'am, you didn't. There is another visitor calling, this time for Mr. Holmes.
A visitor for Mr. Holmes?
As incredible as it sounds, I too am surprised. Who, pray tell, would be here to visit me?
A man by the name of Nikola Tesla, sir.
Show him in, Judson. Mr. Holmes, we will go to try to fetch Ms. Faulkner from the drawing room to here. Mr. Chetwood, shall we? Well, Tesla being here is a surprise. He does not know you, but he does know me.
But you're in disguise.
There's a chance he might see through it, and that must not happen. Nor should Tesla be in the same room as Miss Faulkner, as their stories of the deceased might recognize each other. Oh, Larrabee, I shall sing you to sleep with a sweet dream that may someday soon come true. If we are found out like this, it might mean the plan's failure. I will leave now, but take my brooch. You wait a few minutes and then come back to fetch Mr. Holmes from the drawing room, but tell him that only he may go up. Ms. Faulkner will see only him. Once they are together, linger and press the brooch right up against the outside of the door and avoid that Judson. I doubt he is who he says he is. Now go.
Yes, ma'am.
What do you think, Watson?
Of what, Holmes? The blackmailers? They seem to have an air of confidence about them that I didn't quite expect.
No, not the blackmailers, Watson. Those two are obviously Moriarty's pawns. Mr. Chetwood is actually a man named Larrabee. I saw him lurking about a police station 8 years ago in the case entitled A Study in Scarlet. He ended up doing 2 years in prison for bribing a constable. The woman, however, intrigues me. She has a cooler head than Larrabee, and I dare say a smarter and more noble one, too, but she is unknown, yet familiar. No, Watson, what I meant was, what do you think of Nikola Tesla coming here to see us?
Coming to see you, don't you mean?
Placating my vanity, Watson, only works when I'm bored. I assure you I'm not bored. Now, what do you know of him?
Not much. I've heard the name mixed with a variety of strange ideas. Probably a charlatan selling what the Americans would call snake oil.
I've heard the same things, but I've also heard from far too many sources that the world is flat. The curiosity of his visit right now, however, makes me think there may be more to it.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, I present Nikola Tesla.
Dr. Watson and Sherlock Holmes, please excuse this interruption. I heard you were in the area, and I am honored to meet you both. My curiosity has dragged me away from my work, for I could not miss the chance to compliment Dr. Watson on his writings, and also to see if the real Sherlock Holmes actually lives up to Watson's narrative. His words are a photograph. You are exactly as he describes, sir.
It seems the honor is ours, sir. I thank you for your literary taste. We've heard that you're refining a new technology. Could you explain maybe just...
Yes, could you explain how you knew we would be here? We don't normally publicize our comings and goings.
Of course. It was a simple thing, really. I was working in my lab on the Heterodyne estate and needed assistance connecting two pieces of rather heavy machinery. Upon looking for my assistance, I couldn't find anyone to assist. I finally asked one of the maids where everyone had gone, and she told me, now let me see if I've got this English word correct. The scuttlebutt amongst the staff was that you were on your way here.
Yes, the gossip of the working class is often more accurate than the gilded class would like to admit. So you have accomplished half of your quest, as we have now met, but tell me of the other half. Have you found any of your assistants?
In fact, no, I have not. There was once a whole crew of workers at my disposal. But now, just as all my major breakthroughs in electricity and hydraulics have been realized, and I am about to embark on an engineering feat that will change the very landscape of London itself, everyone has vanished. Even Lord Heterodyne has been called away on more pressing matters. What could be more pressing than changing the world?
At this moment, I can only think of ordering a new rug and perhaps adding new trim to the molding on my flat.
Sherlock, thinking of redecorating when we're talking of changing the world, I don't believe that interior design is what he meant by changing the world.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Miss Faulkner requests to see Mr. Holmes and only Mr. Holmes, as she is still a bit under the weather.
Fair enough. I'm sure that Dr. Watson and Mr. Tesla will have an enlightening conversation about science while I'm gone. I look forward to hearing of it soon. Mr. Chetwood, lead the way. Mr. Chetwood, I'm curious. Have you and your wife been married long?
Oh, for a few years now. I am for certain a happy man.
The logic of the heart is often lost upon even the most astute of minds. I feel that she has married beneath her true worth.
Pardon me, sir. I'm not sure what you meant by that, but I feel I should take offense.
Oh, really? I assure you, Mr. Chetwood, that I did not intend to offend you, nor your Mrs. Chetwood, but certainly to compliment you, as you both seem to be the forgiving type.
The forgiving type?
Well, not only is she more attractive and younger and smarter than you, but also she could easily have acquired a more equitable suitor, thus indicating that she may have been involved in a past scandal of sorts which you have chosen to overlook. Also, she seems to be quite all right with your criminal history, Mr. Larrabee.
Very good, very good. Very good indeed. If only those things were true now. Criminal history, indeed. You must have me mistaken for someone else. Ah, look, we've arrived at the drawing room. Miss Faulkner, a Mr. Sherlock Holmes to see you. And good day to you, Mr. Holmes.
Good day to you, Mr. Chetwood. Miss Faulkner, you appear very well, and I do say the aroma of jasmine you carry is rather inspiring on this chill autumn evening.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes, for compliments both unearned and unasked for. I have heard of you, but I don't know you, Mr. Holmes, nor why you are here. To tell the truth, I doubt you are even him. Don't you always travel with your doctor friend, Watson?
Curious. First, Watson is downstairs conversing and keeping an eye out. Second, it would be ill-conceived for an impostor to try to imitate my likeness, but maybe through our conversation you will be convinced of the truth of who I am. Third, the Chetwoods are not the Chetwoods, and their game is up. Fourth, my business is this. I've been consulted as to the possibility of obtaining from you certain letters addressed to your sister, which are supposedly in your possession and are supposedly being used for the blackmail of Lord Hugo Heterodyne. Your sister is dead, and the steely resolve in your eyes makes me believe that you are possibly after revenge.
Even the most daft stable boy can see anger in another's eyes. And just because you know of my sister and Lord Heterodyne's affair does not prove your name. In fact, I am beginning to believe that you may indeed be an agent of that house. And should I live through this encounter, which would be in the best interest of whoever your master truly is, I shall consult with the real Sherlock Holmes so that he sees your masquerade come to an end.
Believe me, Ms. Faulkner, with the Chetwoods' most
there
present
deception... There is nothing
more
I care to say. Good night.
But my dear Ms. Faulkner, I... Oh, I'm so sorry. How clumsy of me to turn over this chair.
Fire! Fire! Help!
What's that? What's that? Fire?
Fire! Mr. Chetwood! Mrs. Chetwood! Fire! Help!
Fire! Fire!
The lamp, sir, in the kitchen.
Oh, no. A fire?
Don't alarm yourself, Ms. Faulkner. There is no fire.
There's no fire?
The smoke was all prearranged.
Prearranged? Explain yourself, sir.
It means this, Ms. Faulkner. It means that I want that package of letters, as do apparently the Chetwoods, and that by following your eyes just now when you thought there was a fire, I discovered that you hidden them in the upholstery of the banquet across the room. Quite elementary, as you see. I shall now remove them with my pocket knife.
Stop! Are all men, even the great Sherlock Holmes, also brutish?
Stereotyping will win very few battles, madam.
A man explaining stereotypes to me in this century. Look, there is a thread to be pulled upon right there that will open the back. No, here, just let me do it. Yes, I am beginning to believe that you are the actual Sherlock Holmes and not in league with the Chetwoods, whoever they really are. Seriously, that man knows nothing of running an inn. But you must believe in me, too, for blackmail is not my intent, only justice for my sister. She did not die of a broken heart. She was killed, but I need proof.
I believe you may be correct in that. Plus, I see you are at least somewhat aware of the hazardous nature of your surroundings. Simply a single letter and a photograph to prove a link, but more damning material obviously remains elsewhere. May I examine these?
Of course. Holmes, the inn is evacuating, but the Chetwoods are nowhere to be found.
Of course not. It's to be expected. And your chat with Tesla?
Oh, we had a most interesting conversation about this pneumatic undercurrent nucleo-aquatic kinetics concept of his. I thought it mostly fantasy until he produced an incredible device. It looked like a fountain pen with tiny tubes circulating within and around it. Upon dipping it into a glass of water sitting nearby, it, I can't really explain it. The water turned into lightning and then a small cloud of steam. He was very pleased to be able to demonstrate. Holmes, are you even listening?
Of course. And where is Mr. Tesla now?
As soon as our fire started, he told me the excitement was a little much and he needed to get back to his lab. He left.
I believe, Watson, that Tesla may be in more danger than he realizes. Ms. Faulkner, while this letter definitely shows the great affection that Lord Heterodyne held for your sister, I'm much more interested in this photograph, as well as any others you may have. Do you have others?
I have two others. One is the same as this, just with a widened angle to show the entirety of the room. The other is of a strange-looking building somewhere in London.
Now, these three people in the photograph, this is your sister?
Correct. That is Eunice.
And this, of course, as we have just met him, is Nikola Tesla.
I've never actually met the man, but if you say so.
And this third gentleman, he is?
Lord Hugo Heterodyne. You can see the love in his eyes for her, can't you?
Watson, grab Foreman. Tell him to locate Tesla and to bring him to Baker Street immediately for his own protection, and to station two trusted men there. The Heterodyne estate is no longer safe. Spread that word to the staff here, too. Then meet us at the Oceana Importer Tea Shop on 881 St. Cloud Street, where we will collect the rest of Ms. Faulkner's evidence.
You must truly be Sherlock Holmes. How did you...
Quite elementary, Ms. Faulkner. It was the jasmine. Upon smelling it on my entry into the room, I realized it was the rare strain of jasmine found only on Erromango, an island within Oceania. You are, in fact, Alice Faulkner, daughter of the renowned tea merchant Reginald Faulkner. While your family may not be of the same rung on the social ladder as the Heterodynes, you must certainly be of means, otherwise your sister and Hugo never would have met, let alone fallen in love. Further, there are 10 Oceania importer shops located around London. The one on St. Cloud Street is not only somewhat close to where we are now, but also only 3 blocks away from a police precinct. The proprietors of the shop have been instructed by you to hand over your evidence to the constables if anything were to happen, as you yourself have revealed.
Amazing.
Elementary, actually.
You'll get used to that.
And Watson, find Billy, too. Tell her to meet us there, but be sure to enter the shop separately.
Find her in all of London. How am I to do that?
I dispatched her whole gang before you showed up this afternoon. They're all around, and they know you. Find an urchin and ask. Now let's get moving. The game is afoot, and I fear that all along I have been playing checkers while Moriarty has been playing chess.
Ah, the gramophone. For the first time ever in history, the human song is no longer lost to the wind. Our voices may live now forever beyond us. What may be next to live forever? To say God only knows seems hypocritical. I will have to remember to thank Sherlock Holmes for his variations on Beethoven's Romance Opus 50. Yes, that will be my checkmate moment. When all sleights of hand and deception are finally as clear as the knife in his back, I will thank him for his skill and talent. As his life drains and he is just about to shake off the mortal coil, I will tell him of all the times he nearly had me. It will be beautiful. And then we will both vanish. Yet I will continue, and he will not. The pieces are in place, and the end game is upon us. Although I imagine Sherlock still believes we've just started. We can't be stopped. This new world will be dominated by a shadow, nameless to the public, but in the deepest secret, the few who know will know the true, unspeakable name of that shadow. They will never say it aloud, but they will know it and fear it.
In years to come, it will be a synonym for power to only be used by the most powerful. Caesar will no longer be that name, that word. After tomorrow, that name, that word will be Moriarty.
Professor Moriarty, your hand is trembling. Are you feeling okay? Has your headache returned?
Thank you for your concern, Jane. I'm just fine. Maybe a little excited, but fine.
James, you may be the emperor of the criminal underworld, but you are still human.
Shall we learn, then, from Antigone and Ismene? Yes, my headache is back. As are our friends. We shall continue this discussion later. Pass number...
881 FM HD.
Correct. Come in, Bassick and Larrabee, and our honored guest.
Sorry it took a while, sir. By the buttons on my bodice, it looked like Holmes had us trapped there for a minute. A fake fire. And he knows Larrabee's real name. It's safe to say we can assume Holmes knows more than we think he does. But on the bright side, look who we found.
Please, I don't know what Lord Heterodyne is so upset about. I was told a friend's son needed work and we were short a footman in the inn. He must forgive me. I didn't realize it would be a
problem. Mr. Bates... I dare say, although you've seen me around the estate quite a bit, we've never officially met. My name, my actual name, is Professor James Moriarty. If you feel the need for forgiveness from your dear Lord Heterodyne, you may ask for it soon enough. But for now, please be quiet. And Madam Bassick, please don't presume to know anything when it comes to our plans for Holmes. Now, where is Tesla? We're in his lab. I thought he'd be here.
Tesla's disappeared. He came by the inn to meet Holmes, and he talked with Watson alone for a bit before that trick fire. And it's true, sire, he does know my real name. Like he's seen me before. But I was still able to listen in on Holmes, just like my wife said, so I'm sure...
Hold on. Your wife?
Professor Larrabee is still in character, if you catch my meaning. Still... Tesla's appearance was a bit of a surprise, but we salvaged the situation without giving up the whole game, which could have easily happened had Nicholas seen me. It was a bit of below-stairs gossip that nearly did us in.
Which brings us back to Mr. Bates. Mr. Holmes is playing rather a dangerous game, and I'm sorry to say that you appear to be a pawn given up for sacrifice. It would be in your best interest to tell us everything.
But I already have.
The fear in your eyes, Mr. Bates, is both your tell that you are lying and your realization of the gravity of the situation. We shall boil away your reservations soon enough and get to the truth. Bassick, you know how to use Tesla's radio device back there. Go check in on Cragen. His crew was supposed to be tailing Holmes and Watson. And while you're at it, listen in for a bit on Baker Street, just to see if anyone is there.
Yes, sir. Shall I interrupt if there's any news?
Very polite of you, Madam Bassick. Yes, thank you.
Now, Mr. Bates, we know that you are in charge of hiring and firing for the Heterodynes, and after putting our Judson through a number of chores this afternoon... It was very obvious to me that this man is not, nor has he ever been, a servant. Who is he?
I told the Lady Bassick already. An old war buddy from Wimbledon has a son who was in need of work. He showed up as our regular footman fell ill with gout. It just worked out like that. I would have figured out his incompetence for the job soon enough and fired him, but this all just happened. I'll swear on all the Bibles in Canterbury to that effect.
Profanity and religion are not necessary, my dear Mr. Bates. We have science. Do you see this?
It looks like a toy pistol.
A little bit, yes. But I assure you it is not. This, Mr. Bates, is the future. and I am so going to enjoy bringing the future to you. It is what they call a prototype. It's one of a kind at the moment. See, at first it looks a bit like one of those six-shooter revolver pistols from the American West. But then we've got these little tubes that connect here and there to where the cylinder would be. In the cylinder's place is a chamber where the science happens. I myself thought it was a light bulb at first, but no. The chamber, through a myriad of micro-reactions, produces what our dear friend Tesla calls tortured steam, which is then directed out of the barrel. Now, depending on how you torture the steam, you will get a different effect upon your target. For instance, I turn the knob to this first setting and... See? The chamber is beginning to glow. I call this the ochre setting. So much more sophisticated than orange. Now, watch those pallets over by the door.
Oh, dear God.
Once again, Mr. Bates, religion will not help you when science attacks. Now, there are some other useful settings for this weapon, but I find this one here to be the most useful. We used it on our dear Lord Hugo's lover. She was found dead, you know, of a broken heart. Do you know what a broken heart feels like, Mr. Bates? It feels like your whole world is dissolving.
Please, no.
Now, Mr. Bates, don't interrupt, unless you'd like to tell us anything. Okay, we'll get to that. Now, back to this particular setting. I find the effect it has on the human body to be most incredible. Well, see for yourself.
What was it?
Yes. At first it's not much, but yes, it very quickly becomes much. I have shot you, and yes, I see it happening. The process produced by this weapon is slowly but surely steaming through your molecules one by one. It's the chain reaction. That's the term for it. And it can be stopped if I choose. So maybe you should speak quickly. What do you think?
Okay, please, I'll talk. Mr. Holmes once helped me, and I owed him a favor. My estranged wife was blackmailing me, and he fixed it. When he asked me to help him, I was obliged, and it seemed like such a little thing. Holmes asked me to place an Inspector Foreman in the inn as a footman. It was just a little thing. Please, make it stop.
And that's all? You've done no other favors for Mr. Holmes, no matter how small?
None. Oh, please.
Okay.
Oh, no!
Yuck! I'm covered in... What is this?
That is impressive. He completely vaporized into a cloud of steam.
Mr. Bates and Lord Heterodyne went one way, and Eunice Faulkner went another. All with this handy little tool. Now, I believe we got everything from Mr. Bates. Although I thought I'd gotten all the information we needed from our noble sponsor, too. But it certainly does look like we missed the part about the obstinate sister. Well, it's a good thing we've got Sherlock Holmes working on that for us. Speaking of which, Bassick, what news?
Very little at Baker Street, sir. Really, nothing much at all. Yet, honestly, though, sir, with all the excitement going on in the lab, it's hard for me to really hear Sawar. But Cragen's crew, sir, they're following Holmes and Faulkner up St. Cloud Street. Watson is behind them a couple of blocks.
They're going for the rest of the letters. Excellent.
Your orders, sir?
Jane stays here to operate the radio. Notify Cragen and crew to simply follow and report. Then let me know regularly. My guess is that they will retrieve the letters and head back to Baker Street. He always goes back there. Larrabee will get a coach and team of horses and bring me to Baker Street so that I may keep a late-night appointment. If our good detective has succeeded in acquiring these letters and the other evidence, the game ends right there in a great burst of steam. If not, then we move the end of our story to the power plant. Madam Bassett, you go find Tesla. He's the only loose end left. Of all the people over all the continents of Europe and North America, Nikola Tesla is the last remaining person who can identify us. Bring him back here for Jane to deal with. It's nearly 8 o'clock. We will finish this tonight. Now go! Jane, before Larrabee gets back with the coach, would you fix my headache?
Of course, James. I shall sing you to sleep with a sweet dream that may someday soon come true, and your headache will be gone.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Professor. And also, I have one more little thing to ask.
Sherlock Holmes always takes a coach, but tonight he is not. Tonight he walks the distance from the Heterodyne Family Inn to the Oceana Importer Tea Shop through streets of cobblestone, fog, and small islands of light. I'm a few blocks behind, and the occasional silhouette of Holmes and his walking companion, Miss Faulkner, look to be just another well-matched, well-to-do couple on a late evening stroll. Both tall and silent, most likely with eyes darting to alley to storefront to sidewalk to try to spot the other eyes watching them. I've counted 4 burly men trailing us so far, and then 6 small children stalking the men. The men are like bulldogs, stumbling across a scent and marching forward, nearly knocking over anything in their way, while the children are like black cats, perching and peeking and almost impossible to notice. I suspect there are more of them out there than I imagine. Just outside the inn, I spotted one and passed Holmes's message to Billy. Billy is the undisputed queen of this lowest of underground worlds, a member of the unacknowledged parliament that actually runs the city. Her constituents are the discarded, criminal, and desperate, and she looks out for them. In turn, Holmes looks out for her. The Oceana Importer Tea Shop on St. Cloud Street is still open as Holmes and Alice reach the front door. Most shops begin closing around the 8 bells, but Oceana stays open a little later in order to cater to a more nighttime crowd. They're very popular around London and will probably be opening more locations soon. As I enter, the smell of tea brewing overloads my olfactory sense. The crowd of late-night tea drinkers turns briefly to gaze upon a new customer, and then back to their chats and card games. Behind the counter, a young, tall woman with a nearly impossible Victorian neck collar on her dress smiles and winks at me, and then points to a curtain leading to the back room. This is where I find Holmes and Miss Faulkner with a stack of letters spread across a large table, normally used for sorting tea.
Ah, Watson, you're here. Were you able to accomplish your goals?
Yes. Billy should be on her way, and Foreman was quick after Tesla.
Splendid. We might just be able to live through the night, especially with my new rug and ceiling fixtures.
Again with the design work. This hardly seems the time.
Nonsense. Our very lives could depend on interior design. Now, what we have here is very interesting. Miss Faulkner, tell me a little more about your sister and Lord Heterodyne.
My sister and I were very close. We shared everything with each other. She came up this way to open this very store. It's where she and Hugo met. Most of these letters talk about the times they spent picnicking or walking through museums. Hugo worked nearly every day, and they weren't able to see each other often, but when they did, it was beautiful, and he liked to write the letters as a way of keeping those moments alive until the next time they saw each other.
As I can see from the letters I've read so far, are they all like this? There is quite a stack.
All but the last one. Here.
Ah, yes. The something is terribly wrong letter. Oh, yes. Why, this explains much. He names Moriarty in writing after discovering just who he is. This is what got your sister killed, and I dare say Hugo Heterodyne too, even though we have yet to discover his body. It ends with, "Keep this locket close. It will keep you safe. I will come for you soon." I don't see a locket.
Yes, well, I'm wearing it.
Oh, may I examine it?
Yes. Here. It's just some old brass with a small inscription on the back. H.H. Hart E.F. It's very cute.
What is the picture inside?
It doesn't open, actually. It's broken, but it was from her, so I wear it. I feel it keeps me safe.
Sentiment over broken locket. Those feelings won't save you, Ms. Faulkner.
Well, your feelings might save you if you'd let them, Mr. Holmes.
I apologize, Ms. Faulkner. That was not my meaning. Look, do you know what a magnet is?
Of course I know what a magnet is. Why do you... Oh.
Holmes, that metal is not supposed to be magnetic.
You are correct, Watson. It does look to be brass. Brass is not supposed to be magnetic, and yet it is attracting the metal all around it on the table. Besides, brass would not be an appropriate gift from a nobleman to his lady. Perhaps Ms. Faulkner's feelings weren't wrong.
Why, that's very nice.
Just somehow correct, like a broken clock twice a day.
And now we're back.
Yes, in lieu of further awkward silences, how about we keep moving along? Holmes, why is simply the mention of the name Moriarty enough to warrant the death of all these people?
And just who is Professor Moriarty?
His invisibility is his primary weapon. He let it slip only once, and that's when I first became aware of Professor James Moriarty. It was years ago, upon reading through my freshly delivered Encyclopedia Britannica 1875 edition. While the Britannica is widely known for adding facts, figures, and footnotes, it is certainly not known for removing them. I took note that a certain acclaimed academic from Oxford was missing between the entries of Mauresque Architecture and Morocco. Having memorized all past editions of the Britannica, I recalled how Professor James Moriarty rose to acclaim through the study of multiple disciplines, including medicine, physics, economics, and engineering, to name a few. He became worthy of note in the Britannica after predicting and manipulating the great eggnog shortage of 1873 and publishing a marvelous paper on his methods and findings a year later. Then 2 years later, he vanished. I've contacted a friend with Oxford. You remember him, Watson. Davidson, the dean of faculty. He was once a victim of confidence scheme. The case of the Opal Crown, I believed you called it.
Yes, I remember that. Smelled like catnip for a week after.
Davidson was so kind as to write a letter explaining the history of Moriarty at Oxford. He also provided some employment and personnel records that were very revealing. It appears that shortly after the publication of that edition of the Britannica, he, in the terms of Davidson, went a little nuts. He began dressing as a bum and accosting students and faculty. It was a terribly awkward situation for a bit, but then he packed up and left, never to be seen again. Oxford also felt it was in its best interest to have the encyclopedia remove him from their pages. This is exactly what he wanted. His invisibility was his primary weapon, and he slipped up.
That's it? Just because Eunice knew his name, she had to die? That's just horrible.
Oh, but it is more than that. Not only did she know his name, but she knew what he looked like. See the photo, the one with your sister, Lord Herodine, and Tesla? The larger, more panoramic photo shows this to be Tesla's lab on the Herodine estate. You can see the crest over the door. The whole room is visible and actually captures Moriarty himself. In fact, near that large metal cylinder with those two protruding narrow pyramids stands the man who visited me posing as Lord Hugo Herodine 2 days ago to initiate this whole series of events. You can see him standing and reading some plans. He probably didn't know he was being photographed at the time. Since I'd never met Hugo Herodine before, Moriarty was able to place events into motion through this ploy. He knew I would quickly find this out. So, on the one hand, we are walking right into his trap. On the other hand, well, we have Tesla with us, and we have Moriarty's whole gang right here where we want them in a photograph. I can see Larrabee and Madame Bassick, and I believe this man to be Cregan, who is actually following us outside. And, of course, there is Mr. Bates clearing some lunch. What is also curious is this slight blur near Moriarty. Due to the necessary exposure time for photography, anyone in motion is not captured completely by the camera. I wonder who he is scuttling around in there.
It's impossible to make out who he is.
Whoever it is, she's wearing a dress.
Ah, yes. Astute eye, Ms. Faulkner. I surmise it could be our Mrs. Chetwood, whomever she really is. Now, this last photograph, it is of what looks like a factory, but it is not a factory. More of these cylinders with the narrow pyramids, lots of pipes of various sizes going into and out of the building, a few large ones going out into the Thames.
Tesla told me about this place. It's a power plant. Once it's turned on, it will produce an enormous amount of electricity using only water, and it will do it without any pollution. This single plant alone could power half of London.
A London without coal? Would we be able to choose our health over our nostalgia? Look, do you see the buildings in the background? I know where this is.
Holmes, the back door.
Easy, Watson. Billy, it's good to see you.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. It's good to see you, too. Although it looks like you've got some strange hounds on your scent this evening.
Very much so. They think we are right where they want us, cornered, but they are actually right where we want them, and they are taking the bait. I assume you were not seen entering?
Nor will I be seen leaving. There are four of them, each covering a separate line of sight out of the store in the back alley. I don't think they're paying us much attention. They seem to be talking to themselves. I've got three pips watching each. So why do you have a loony bin chasing you tonight, Sherlock?
A story for later, perhaps, but these men are more dangerous than your average lunatic. Here, I'm going to gather all these letters, and Ms. Faulkner, you wrap them up in that parchment that to look just like a bundle of tea. Being that this is your family business, please make it look authentic. Now, Billy, we need you to distract our friend to the north, for we will leave that way. Have your pips rob him of everything they can, and then run off to the west. However, there is a more dangerous job. This parcel needs to get to Mrs. Hudson back on Baker Street. I cannot stress enough how dangerous this will be. This parcel is the thing these men are looking for.
I understand completely. I'll send it with Mouse and Snake. They are the best. And me and the pips will make sure this Christmas ham troubles you no more. We're gonna go Dickens on him!
Watson, how much money do you have on you?
Well, I was going to buy a present for Mary upon her return, so I've got around 20 pounds on me.
Give it to Billy.
Holmes, that's a lot of money!
I thought you were a doctor, not a banker. It's a small price to pay for our safety and the resolution of this case. Hand it over, Watson. Billy, please be sure to accommodate the risks this evening taken by all our friends. Whatever is pilfered, however, please bring it to me regardless of how small or seemingly insignificant.
My smile is my word. How could you put such a little girl in such a dangerous position? She was not but 12 years old, Holmes.
Billy is 17 years old, Miss Faulkner. She is short, yes, and she carries a cuteness about her, which is more than a bit disarming, yes, but I assure you, behind the willowy veil of your perception of her, there lies a viper. Now let's be silent and see how this little girl saves us. Once the commotion of robbery can be heard, we will be in the clear. Then we'll find a cab to take us down to the river.
Cregan! Check! Cregan! Report!
Cregan here. They've taken up at the tea shop. It's busy there tonight. We've got all points of the compass covered, ready for your orders.
Good job, Cregan. Keep watch. They will certainly leave by the back. Report back as soon as they do.
Will do. Cregan out. Out in this fog again. It's still cold. They ain't fixed that yet.
Excuse me, mister. Could you spare a pence?
Or maybe some bread? It's hurting cold tonight.
Where did you come from? Be gone with you. We're all hurting, and I ain't got nothing for you but maybe some more hurting.
Well, that ain't very nice, mister. I think you need to be a little nicer out here in our neighborhood if you're going to stay standing there.
Are you threatening me? I'll pick you up over this fire and roast your blonde little head.
We'll never say I didn't warn you. Caw, caw!
What the? Oof, the my foot! Ouch! Hey, come back here, you little monsters. I'll skin you alive for pushing me. Oh, no! They took my wallet. No, they took everything. My knife! My other knife! Oh, God, the radio! The professor's going to kill me! You get back here with my stuff!
Okay, the coast is clear. Let's head out.
Are you sure those children will be all right?
They're more resilient than you acknowledge. I just hope they stay mostly on the up and up once they become adults. I would never want to have Billy as an adversary.
Holmes, a cab.
Grab it. Miss Faulkner, we are going to the power plant. It may be too dangerous to...
For a woman? And yet, you would leave me here at the shop, still being watched by thugs hell-bent on my demise?
I was going to say, too dangerous to leave you alone, and that you should come with us, even though that, too, would be very dangerous. I would leave the choice to you, but my advice is to come with us.
My apologies, Mr. Holmes. The path of avenging my sister is wearing on me, and I jumped to a conclusion that I obviously should have avoided. Your cohort Billy showed that to me, but I didn't see it.
I dare say we all carry prejudices, most times not even knowing them until they compel us to act. Come, the night is almost finished.
Jane, come in, Jane.
I'm here, Professor.
We've been waiting for a while now, and I see nothing but a poorly disguised constable lingering around the front of Baker Street. What news from inside?
Nothing from the inside. I can't even make out Mrs. Hudson doing anything downstairs. I've left the channel open when I can.
Maybe she's reading. There are lights on downstairs, but none upstairs. What of the others? Are Holmes, Watson, and Ms. Faulkner still at the shop?
Your timing is impeccable, Professor. Leary, McTagg, and Parsons have all just checked in with no change. Haven't heard from Cragen, though. He's 2 minutes late with his report.
They've left. Cragen has most likely been compromised. Do not try to raise him again. If it was Holmes that took him out, we don't want your lovely voice coming out of a brooch in his pocket now, do we? What of Bassick?
Still no sign. She's been waiting around upstairs at the Heterodyne estate, but no one has shown up. In fact, everyone has apparently left for the evening. We're alone here. Her radio sounds odd, though. There's an interference that I can't place.
Tesla once said something about stone buildings causing trouble. There are a lot of things that cause trouble with this radio machine. I'm heading to the power plant. Keep me posted. Moriarty out. Larrabee.
Yes, sir.
Take us to the power plant. Just before we get there, pull over and let me out. You then take the carriage inside and wait. I suspect that they are watching the place. When they come inside to investigate, I want you to feed the hamster, which will set off an unnecessarily complicated and intricate series of contraptions that, upon completion, will activate the reactor. I will be outside to prevent their escape. Do you understand?
Yes, sir. Feed the hamster.
Let's go.
Holmes, we've been outside here for nearly an hour. Are you sure they'll come here?
We've left them few other places we would go. We're not at Baker Street, and they are a little too confident about knowing that. Moriarty knows of the photographs, as he as much as told us in our introduction, so he knows that we know of this place. He will come here. However, we still have no hard evidence of an actual crime, so we cannot go to the police. We suspect that they have killed at least two, but most certainly many more. I fear for Mr. Bates and whoever the cameraman was for these photographs, yet no proof. I'm sorry to say, Watson, but we ourselves must be attacked. Our survival of their attempted murder will be the proof that will tie it all together. Yes, we are walking into a trap.
I am ready, Mr. Holmes. Please do not doubt me.
I do not, Ms. Faulkner, but I do implore you, follow my instructions to the letter when I give them. You may be saving our lives along with your own. Wait. I hear a coach approaching.
Ah, look, it's got the Heterodyne crest on it, too.
And Larrabee driving. He's climbing down to open that massive door. And in they go. Let's head over. Miss Faulkner, stay close. Whisper, this enormous room won't give us much cover.
There's the carriage, but no driver.
Keep alert.
These machines, they're huge. Did anyone notice that the room is now domed? And what is it with that huge dish in the middle of the room?
Quiet. I think I hear someone.
Hey! Hey! Over here! I'm over here! Yes! On the other side! Around the collector dish! Over by the large curtain cage by the wall! Yes! Over here! Way over here! Hello!
Larrabee, what are you about, you scoundrel? Moriarty isn't in the coach, is he? Your allegiance to him will be your undoing, you know.
And your clutter will be your undoing, Sherlock Holmes. You should have listened to Mrs. Hudson.
He's by the door.
Moriarty, I don't know what you're planning, but we have you. You are done.
Stay right where you are, Mr. Holmes. See this little pistol here? It's the future. Once I mass-produce them, well, I will certainly be the only one controlling the destiny of the world. Watch.
What is that orange glow coming from?
I prefer the term ochre to describe this.
Oh, the carriage, it's been destroyed. What in the king's name was that?
Well, the horses got away at least. The poor creatures are terrified.
We don't have the evidence you're looking for, Moriarty. Even if you kill us, it's still out there. Inspector Foreman has it by now, and after interviewing Tesla, I'm sure we've got enough to end you and your whole crew.
Hardly. Larrabee, you may feed the hamster. And now, your time is already at an end. You see, your bluffs aren't even good enough for a pinochle game. You do not have Tesla, and even if that evidence is in the wind, without his word, it will mean nothing. With you gone, it is only a matter of time before we find him. Oh, we won't kill him, though. He's too valuable for the future. We'll fix him up right, set him up in America, and make him forget all about London and all those people he briefly met before they vanished. We can do this, and we will do this, and we are doing this.
What's going on? What's all that noise?
He's fed the hamster, and now it's shaking. The spinning wheel of a fed and happily running hamster in its wheel has apparently triggered a lever that is rolling back a curtain to reveal a control room filled with an incredibly complex contraption. It's throwing switches on a control panel. Is that a tennis racket?
Goodbye, Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson. Send your regards to your sister, Miss Faulkner. One less loose end, Larrabee. At least you know what you've got coming. The others, well, they'll find out.
Watson, run over there and try to open the control room. It looks like the tennis racket knocking over the cheese grater has caused another switch to fall.
It's locked. This is a very heavy door on this cage. It's not budging.
Look, there's water flowing from those pipes into the giant bowl.
And the falling cheese grater has activated a series of dominoes to fall, which has caused a gramophone to spin and pull on a string, which is causing a ratchet and pulley system to pull another switch.
Oh, no. What's happening?
The pneumatic undercurrent nucleo-aquatic kinetics. It seems we are inside the reactor of a power plant. Do you see above the collecting bowl? It looks like an electric haze and sounds like a menacing power is building. The air is shimmering all around.
Oh! Oh, my cufflinks just shocked me. Ow! My pocket watch just did too. Another switch has fallen. Oh, now those pyramids have red lightning coming from them. Oh, the zip hair on my pants! Oh, my!
I only feel a slight tingle from my cufflinks and the shillings in my pocket. Watson, come back over here where the effect seems less. It looks like you're dancing with ants.
This is the most mesmerizing light show for sure.
Help, please, Professor, help! Please let me out! No!
Larrabee just vaporized. Did the reactor do that?
It appears so. It seems safer here in the middle, but water keeps coming in to fuel whatever reaction this is, and the reaction continues to build.
Another switch is about to fall. Once the scale having sand poured upon it has tipped to the left, the final switch will go. Holmes, you must do something.
There appears to be nothing to do, Watson.
As soon as the sand has poured from that giant hourglass, we will all face the same fate as Mr. Larrabee.
Here on KVSC FM and AC St. Cloud and Camera Gay HD3 Minneapolis St. Paul, as we are broadcasting live from the Great River Educational Arts Theater Helgeson Learning Lab for KVSC's and Great Theater's third annual production of live radio theater. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and we've got 9.5 minutes until we join Holmes, Watson, and Alice Faulkner back in the heart. And we've got 1 minute left of our intermission here on KVSC 88.1 FM before we go back to Great Theater's Helgeson Learning Lab Theater in Waite Park, which gives me just enough time to tell you that if you enjoy this programming on KVSC, you can still pledge your support by calling 320-308-5872, also known as 308-KVSC, or go online at kvsc.org, where every donation will be matched through the end of the year, not once, but twice, by a generous local family who's got ties to KVSC going back to the 1970s, thusly tripling your pledge. That and support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund are the things that keep community radio and educational theater alive in central Minnesota. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack. And now we go back to the foggy streets of nighttime London, where we find Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson, and Alice Faulkner facing certain death at the hands of Professor James Moriarty as he has them trapped within Nikola Tesla's steampunk reactor.
Ow! Now the pocket knife is truly starting to burn.
Well, the metal on me has calmed down a little, I must say. It was much worse over there.
And yet it is growing for me. I haven't moved. You have. Miss Faulkner, how do you feel?
Perfectly fine. If it weren't for an exploding Mr. Larrabee, this would be a perfectly interesting experience of color and science.
Watson, quick, move close to Miss Faulkner, as will I. Quickly!
Holmes, my cufflinks and watch and zip air, they've quieted down.
As have mine, Watson. It's the locket. Somehow, it creates a barrier for what's happening. I'm sorry, Ms. Faulkner, but we're all going to have to get very close. I'm afraid that any sense of modesty must be set aside for our survival.
I assure you, I am no prude, Mr. Holmes, especially when it comes to saving lives. Look, the final switch is about to fall.
It's almost silent, but it's beautiful.
Like a pulsing, intertwining rainbow knot within a waterfall.
And the air around us is still pulsing. It looks like the locket has saved us, but only in this tiny space. Everything outside the control room is gone. Mr. Larrabee, the remains of the coach, all of it. I'm going to flip a coin out into the room. Yes, quite dangerous indeed. As long as the water continues to flow, the reaction will continue. Watson, what did Tesla say about the energy having nowhere to go?
Yes, he said that once the power station was turned on, it would be self-sufficient, but the power needed to actually go somewhere, so he directed it into the ground. The Earth can handle as much as this process produces because it actually comes from the Earth in the first place, or something like that. Anyhow, if it wasn't put back into the Earth, there would be an automatic shutoff. Once the amount of energy built up enough, the reaction would stop after a variety of automated systems kicked in. He called it a circuit breaker?
Wait, what is that over by those large cables exiting the building? Just beneath the window there. The box with the other cables going into it.
It might be what we're looking for. Let's shuffle that way.
metal on the box has changed colors as we drew near. This seems promising. I'm opening it.
Yes. Clearly marked as safety shutdown. But we never would have been able to reach it in time, even if we had known what it was and where it was. All right, I'm throwing the switch.
Amazing.
Magic.
New technology, which is beyond our current recognition, always looks like magic. Those of us who do not believe in magic, however, are not tricked by the new technology, just wary of it, regardless of where it shows up. Quickly now, we must remove ourselves and get back to Baker Street as soon as we can. Watson, let's work on breaking this window.
Professor! Come in, Professor!
Yes, Jane. Moriarty here.
Tesla is still unaccounted for, but Leary has reported back. They found Cragen. It's not pretty.
What happened to Cragen?
As best they could tell, he was robbed by some children and gave chase. He followed them through an alley where he ran into a low-hanging beam. Knocked unconscious, they took everything off him, including his clothes. When he awoke, he was so enraged, he stormed into the tea shop, thinking the culprits had taken refuge there. Well, a naked man in public is certainly against social mores, so a group of men threw him out into the street where he was promptly run over by a passing carriage. He told this story to Leary with his last dying breath as he succumbed to his injuries.
It seems like a very long dying breath, if you ask me. No matter, though. Saves us the time and effort, doesn't it? Feel free to overload and detonate the other transmitters whenever you wish. Holmes and Watson are gone, and so is the last connection between the Faulkners, the Heterodynes, and us. All the links are now broken, and I am unchained.
Professor, I'd wait on killing off our gang just yet. Leary, McTagg, and Parsons, having realized that Holmes was indeed gone from the tea shop, decided to head over to Baker Street. There are actually two poorly disguised constables hanging out, and Holmes, Watson, and the Faulkner girl all just walked in the front door.
What? I sealed them inside Tesla's reactor myself. There was no way that... This time, I will watch him die myself.
Now that we are back on our home territory, Moriarty will come to us and we will have him. Mrs. Hudson, tea for seven.
I'm right here, Sherlock. There's no need for bellowing. Here is the package from Billy, as well as everything they've collected from that thug. Looks like they stripped him clean. Pants, shirt, wallet, two knives, and this pretty little brooch, which I think is a little out of sorts for a man like that. Wait, I've seen one of these before. Can't place it, though. Now, tea for seven. I count you, Watson, Miss Faulkner, Inspector Foreman, Mr. Tesla, and me. That's six. Are we expecting another guest, Mr. Holmes?
Yes, our guest of honor, in fact. Please, Mrs. Hudson, let's get to it. Miss Alice Faulkner, I would like to introduce Nikola Tesla. I believe he knew your sister.
Mr. Tesla, it is an honor to finally meet you.
The honor is mine, Miss Faulkner. Eunice told me much about you. Hugo, her and I were friends.
I can see that by the photograph.
She told me how she envied the way that you had a head for business. She was also very kind and fun, and Hugo loved her deeply. In fact, contrary to what I imagine you've heard, he was not going to break off the engagement. Far from it. They were both to journey with me to New York and the great Niagara Falls. We were to build a grand power station there, and while at it, Hugo and Eunice were to be married in a land where the king has no say.
That makes me want to weep.
She was the love of his life, which is why he compelled me to create the locket that you now wear around your neck. It was for safety around our experiments. We have just recently tamed this steampunk force, but not too long ago, it was a wild and dangerous endeavor, and Hugo would never have forgiven himself if Eunice had accidentally wandered into harm's way. However, the properties of physics still apply.
Just the right kind of magnetic field would protect the wearer from even the most powerful stray bolts of energy.
Ms. Faulkner, would you mind terribly if I borrowed that locket for just a bit? I feel I may be able to put it to use soon.
But of course.
And now we wait, but I dare say from not much longer.
Holmes, with that weapon that Moriarty possesses, how do we know that he won't just blow up the whole house?
It's elementary, dear Watson. Moriarty suffers from the same flaw that has plagued villains for millennia, hubris. He wants to do it personally and up close, not just to ensure it is done, but also to be there for the moment. He will walk up those stairs any second. Everyone behind me. I'm the one he wants first.
Well, someone could have opened this door for me! T-47 doesn't just carry itself up the stairs!
Mrs. Hudson, you had our hearts racing.
And look who I found just entering the foyer, Lord Hugo Heterdyne.
Hello. Just in time for tea, I see.
Mrs. Hudson, this is not Lord Hugo Heterdyne. This is Professor James Moriarty.
Everyone hold still. No one moves. Stand right there, Mrs. Hudson. As Holmes can attest, this weapon packs quite a nasty punch. But you've not seen anything yet. Very soon you shall share the fate of the real Lord Heterdyne, as well as many others, including his Mr. Bates. The side effect of this very painful process you're all about to experience is that there is no evidence left to suggest that you ever existed. It's brilliant. Thank you, Mr. Tesla.
You're mad.
Oh, no, not mad. Angry, yes, but not mad.
No, Professor, you are indeed mad. So mad, in fact, that you have blinded yourself and are unable to understand that your game is up.
Holmes, why are you walking toward him? He'll shoot!
Fear not, Watson. Moriarty has been so consumed with my demise that he has failed to notice that he has already lost.
What do you mean? With this gun, I cannot be stopped. And while I would love to hear why you think I have been defeated, standing here now with my gun to your forehead, I find that I no longer care. Goodbye, Sherlock Holmes. What in the name of... Oh!
A worthy roundhouse punch if I've ever seen one, Mr. Holmes.
You lifted him off his feet. I've got the weapon.
Here, turn that dial counterclockwise. Then pull that tube out of the chamber, and then unscrew the barrel. There, it is completely disabled.
Get up, you. You'll be begging for the hangman by the time His Majesty's justice is done with you.
How? What happened?
Elementary. So simple, I'm surprised you missed it.
We all missed it. How did you know the gun wouldn't fire?
As soon as I met whom I thought was Lord Hugo Heterdyne and heard of the work of Mr. Tesla, I assumed, based on his field of study, that we would eventually face a threat from electricity. To combat this threat, I employed countermeasures. One is the very rug upon which Moriarty was standing. Its lining is a heavy rubber which has distorted the electrical field around him. Plus, the plaster upon the ceiling and walls has been trimmed with thin copper wiring. It creates a bit of a cage. But that was before I learned of your locket, Ms. Faulkner.
So, you created a trap for the electricity simply because you heard Mr. Tesla was involved?
Naturally, as would any educated person facing the same threat. It's elementary, really.
Well, don't mind me. I'm just going to hold the tea here until everything settles. Maybe it's tea for six and not seven after all.
It is finally over, Mrs. Hudson. My sister may rest.
No, Ms. Faulkner, it is not over. We may have broken Moriarty's sword, but we have not captured the true mastermind, have we? Where is it? In the professor's pocket, another brooch. You may speak freely now, whoever you are.
You are a true wonder, Sherlock Holmes. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Jane Moriarty. James and I, as you may have surmised, are twins, although we are not equal. I realized this from age 3. while he was sent to schools and allowed to ride after foxes and do all the manly things that your world offers, I was instructed to knit and be prepared to be auctioned off to some future miser. I vowed not to have that. I found a way to study alongside James, and soon he discovered that I was far more astute than he was in all matters of education, and I discovered that he was a fair bit unstable in the brain. From headaches to fits of rage, he was nearly uncontrollable as a child, and certainly crueler than most. I could deal with him, though, so we made a pact. He would provide me with opportunities that this society denied to my gender, and I would enhance his career and find a way to soothe his torment. I succeeded in both. As a twin, I disguised myself and went to class for him, eventually even teaching courses for him, while he could barely leave his bed. And through this new science of psychology, I was able to crack his mind, as well as many of other minds who have crossed my path. We're twins, after all, but I was living for both of us. It certainly worked for a while, but I grew bored. This is a world full of new wonders of nature and the mind, and I intend to take it all. My brother, is he conscious?
Yes. I'm sorry, Jane. I tried.
And that is all you could ever do, James. But your pride just could not be placated. You do realize that if you'd never have gone around my back and published that paper on your eggnog experiment, you wouldn't have ever wound up in Encyclopedia Britannica, and Holmes would have never come across our name? Hubris. I've always told you, but you wouldn't listen.
Truly are so brilliant, why not pursue your own course outside of the shadows? Force the public to accept that a woman truly can do these things only allowed to men.
Your tea company might have been acceptable enough, but with what I wanted to bring to the world, they would burn me at the stake. Although such a spectacular conflagration unfolding from the misgivings of an uneducated populace would save me a great deal of trouble and expense. Isn't that right, Mr. Holmes?
Quickly, the brooch from Cragen. It's glowing red. Put it with the locket.
And now it's not. Neither is the one on Moriarty that her voice is coming from. What is going on?
The sounds you hear are the detonations of the radio transmitters carried by the remainder of our gang. I hope no innocent bystanders were hurt. Being it's the middle of the night, that might not just be wishful thinking. Cutting links in the chain, Mr. Holmes, can get messy. And now I will be free. With the exception of our dear Madam Bassick, who is currently packing up Tesla's lab, and whom I will be bringing to America with me to continue Tesla's work under a new name, the only remaining people to know that I exist as Jane Moriarty are all in that room. Your clutter will be your undoing, Mr. Holmes. Goodbye.
What was that?
That was, I believe, the Heterodyne estate exploding, and with it Tesla's lab where Bassick was and where Jane Moriarty was presumably broadcasting.
Jane! No! How did you...
It's elementary. Mere child's play, actually. You see, my dear professor, if I may still call you that, when you called on me to set this game in motion, I felt the blackmail case to be too simple, but then my clutter became your undoing. I know every scrap of paper in this room, every strange trinket, every piece of fabric, every dab of ash, even those on the floor. This room is the very outer appearance of my mind, and I assure you I am in command of that. When you entered my apartment, you wore one of these Heterodyne crest brooches upon your overcoat, an overcoat that you kept on while pacing around the room during our conversation. As you left, it appeared that your step was a bit lighter, and your coat slightly more even in the shoulders, as if an item filling a pocket had been removed. After you left, it took less than a minute to locate a similar but larger brooch under the stack of London Times over in the corner by the gas pipe. Upon brief examination, this was obviously more intricate and complicated than a simple piece of jewelry. Then, when I was holding it the next evening, it vibrated and produced a slight sound that I'd never heard before, and then voices. Realizing that I was holding a technological mystery I could not understand, and realizing that you placed it here for a reason, logic insisted, regardless of how absurd it sounded at first, this device could be used to listen in on my conversations. And after a number of interesting comments by our very villains here, it seems I was right. However, not wanting to be a troglodyte fiddling with a potentially loaded weapon, I simply sent it back to its place of origination. Foreman enlisted the help of Mr. Bates. He passed it back to him and instructed him to place it safe, unseen, and deeply hidden back at the estate. Not knowing if others within my circle had been tricked into carrying one of these technological ears, I had to feign ignorance about the contents of the letter I received from Oxford. It seemed that, within his personnel files, there included a mention of a sibling that was to receive a small pension from James Moriarty's salary, a Jane Moriarty, invalid and medically unfit for employment. You see, James, I've known about your sister all along, but it turns out that it was you who needed the charity, while it was really Jane Moriarty who did the work.
Your only consolation is that Mr. Bates died with honor, never revealing the truth under torture. But you will pay for this, Holmes. Even though my sister just tried to kill me, I will end you.
Not likely. Watson will write this up as just another witty story, and I assure you we will all go on. You, on the other hand, will face justice.
Now, who suffers from hubris? Ah, Mrs. Hudson, I shall sing you to sleep with a sweet dream that may someday soon come true.
What?
Whoa! Mrs. Hudson, you dropped the
grab tea. Her, Watson. You
know, what?
She's got a gun.
I've got her.
Ah!
Another bullet hole in the ceiling.
What?
Mrs. Hudson, are you with us?
Yes. Why am I being restrained? What is... Oh, dear, a gun. Oh, dear, another bullet hole in the ceiling! Holmes! I will keep your deposit for this!
And she's back. Let's just take that gun there. Thank you.
What is going on? If this isn't Lord Heterodyne, does that mean his maid won't bring by more marmalade? She was the sweetest young lady.
Mrs. Hudson, that maid was the true mastermind and invisible spider at the center of a criminal web that was on the verge of taking over the world in a manner which we could not comprehend. When she met you, she somehow planted an idea in your head that was activated just now when Moriarty spoke to you. Nonetheless, the bullet hole in the ceiling is yours to pay for, I'm afraid.
I swear, Holmes, I will have my revenge before they hang me. This is not over.
Oh, but yes, it is. Foreman, please. I feel we've all heard enough.
Save it for the hangman. Let's go.
It's done, Sherlock, and even as the clock tower chimes midnight.
That depends. Mr. Tesla, would it have been necessary for Jane to have been in your lab for her to be speaking to us on the radio?
Most likely she was in the transmitter room just off to the side of the main lab. Now a person could speak into one of the radios to any and all of the others, but to overload the system like that, it could only have been done from that room. And it sounded like a very hefty explosion.
No, unless the constables find her lifeless body in the remains of the estate, and it's doubtful they will. I fear we have not seen the end of Jane Moriarty. It's elementary, my dear Watson. She just quoted, in its entirety, our earlier conversation from this evening about being burned at the stake. She heard this after I disposed of their little cockroach bug listening device. Wrapped up by midnight? The curious case of Professor James Moriarty may have been wrapped up by midnight, but the mystery of the vanishing sister, I feel, has just begun.
Again, tonight from the Helgeson Learning Lab Theater, KVSC Radio, through its affiliated Amper stations, broadcasting out over 10,000 coastlines, and the Great River Educational Arts Theater, Central Minnesota's most celebrated theatrical producing company, brings the third production in this yearly unique radio theater series to a close. This evening, the play was a reinvigoration of Orson Welles' own adaptation for radio of William Gillette's endearing melodrama, based on the famous stories by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle as imagined by KVSC's Jeff Carmack. Tonight's cast has been Dr. Watson, played by Justin Guzman.
I know what three of those words mean.
Alice Faulkner by Angela Beckman.
A man explaining stereotypes to me in this century.
Mrs. Hudson by Jennifer Schroeder.
Your clutter will be your undoing.
Mr. Bates and Nikola Tesla by Bruce Mancini.
But it looked like a toy pistol.
And it sounded like a very hefty explosion.
Larrabee by Rick Lynn.
I'm not sure what you just meant by that, but I feel I should take offense.
Inspector Foreman by Michael Becker.
Save it for the hangman. Let's go.
Cragen by Anthony Ike.
Oh, my knife! And my other knife!
Madam Bassick by Wendy Storkamp.
By the buttons on my bodice, it looked like Holmes had us trapped.
Billy by Lori Becker.
My smile is my word.
Professor James Moriarty by Jeffrey Bleem.
You may feed the hamster.
Jane Moriarty by Jennifer Leverance.
I shall sing you to sleep with a sweet dream that may someday soon come true.
And Sherlock Holmes by Jay Ramos.
Elementary, really. The mere child's play of deduction.
Our source for all the wonderful noises is Foley artist Drew Sevcek, along with our cast. Stage manager is Eric Stewart. Additional music and sound coordination has been Jeff Carmack. KVSC technical support has been Jim Gray and Alex Hartman. And I'm director John Legg, an invisible spider at the center of this web. And please join us next year at the Helgeson Learning Lab Theater and on the air at 88.1 FM KVSC for another radio drama featuring an original script written by you? Yes, you heard that correctly, all of you who have sat through the credits just like it was a superhero movie. KVSC Radio and Great Theater are announcing that we will be taking original submissions for next year's performance. Submission guidelines will be posted soon at kvsc.org, but basically bring us some good quality radio, and Great Theater and KVSC will bring your story to life. This program was made possible with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the Legacy Amendment, which was passed by voters in 2008. Thank you. And now, back to KVSC-FM in HD St. Cloud and KMOJ HD3 Minneapolis-St. Paul and our regularly scheduled programming.